Modim Simcha, welcome. I'm going to try to cover a lot in a very short time, so they say this is really, and I can document this, this is really a 20-plus hour shiur. We're going to do it under an hour, so it's going to be very, very compact. And hopefully give a little bit of direction in terms of many of the nature, what is Sefer Kohelet about? What does it tell us about the meaning of life? Shlomo HaMelech, how did he go wrong? What was, and how does he have the chutzpah to give us Musar in Sefer Kohelet? What is the meaning and the reason for Parah Adumah? Yes, there is a reason for Parah Adumah, but there with me, you'll see. Don't throw anything yet. Wait till the end. And what is Tumah Tara all about? So those are some of the things that I have to cover over the next few minutes. Okay, so everyone focus. We're gonna go through it. Point number one. I'm going to really start with the punchline. The punchline of Sefer Kohelet, I believe, and I was saying this for years and years, until finally I found that the Vilna Gaon makes this point, although he has a different direction, what he does with it, but I was very excited when I finally found that the Gras says this in his Hakdamah to Sefer Kohelet, that very simple point, we know that different Sfarim Tanakh have different vocabulary. And ancient Nevi'im, Misnan, Misnan, Echad, there's different language and vocabulary, different style. Although it's not unique to Sefer Kohelet at all, we find it also in Eov and elsewhere, I'll get to in a moment, but at least one example, but the word that is probably going to tip you off more quickly than any other word, that if you know, someone throws a pasuk at you, and you don't know where it's from, but if you don't know where the pasuk's from, and they throw a pasuk at you, and it contains this word in it, you can take an educated guess, not be certain, but take an educated guess that this is a pasuk from Kohelet, and that word, of course, is heaven. Okay, so the first word, new vocabulary word, so to speak, that you've got to have, and it's one of the things that makes Sefer Kohelet so confusing, because it's used in different ways. Hareza Hevel can mean that, you know, that the phenomenon is Hevel, can mean that the statement is Hevel, can be used in many different ways, but you just look at the first real concept of Sefer Kohelet, which is Pasuk Beth, after the introduction of Tevei Kohelet and David, Nachu Shalim, the first real Pasuk, Havel Havalim Amar Kohelet, Havel Havalim Akol Havel, and even without the, you know, help of word, etc., you could see right away that obviously the word that we need to focus on is the word Hevel. And without getting into the meaning of it, the one point, which is the point of the Gra makes as well, is that if we keep on talking about Hevel throughout the Sefer, in the introduction, in the summation, at the end of the Sefer, in Perek Yud-Bet, you can see this again in Perek Yud-Bet Pasuk Chet, which is right below, Havel Havelim Amar Kohelet HaKol Havel, which is a reprise of Pasuk Bet in Perek Aleph. So we understand that Hevel is central, but what we need to realize is that perhaps, if it keeps us talking about Hevel, perhaps this is referring to the old friend Hevel of Sefer Bereishis. Okay, and that's the first key that we need to have. That, as the Gra puts it, the entire Sefer Kohelet is built in some way or another on the story of Cain and Hevel. If you don't understand that, you're missing the most important dimension of the whole Sefer. Now, I can't do all that today and show you parak by parak by parak how this is true, but I want to give you a couple of examples and show you what I mean by it. And, okay. So if you look at the bottom of the page, we're obviously not going in order. That would be too boring. So if you go to the bottom of the page, and let's take a look at just an example or two. I have a whole, you know, one could go through the whole page, but very quickly, for example, we have the story of Cain and Hevel. And what is the motive? What is the driving force behind the event of the fight between Cain and Hevel? In one word, what is the motive? What emotion? Kinah, right? Good. Glad you're here. Good to see you. Okay, so kinah, absolutely. Parapet paskidal. Yesh Hevel asher nasal la'arshon. This pas begins and ends with Hevel. Yesh Hevel, the very bottom of page one. Yesh Hevel asher nasal la'arit. Asher yesh tzadikim asher magi alehem kemaseh rasha'im, v'yesh rasha'im asher magi alehem kemaseh tzadikim, amarti shgam tehavel. Okay, this is one, but I was working with Pascal Med, but we'll start with that. Okay, One of the two major complaints about life that Shlomo Melech has in Sefer Kohelet, there are two. We'll get back to the Canaan in just a moment. It's right above. But in any case, one of the major complaints about life, there are two of them. One is that progress in life, whether it's personal or whether it's collective, whether it's in terms of a generation or in terms of an individual, progress in life is cut short by death. That's one complaint. And the second complaint is that life, and this is the first thing that all parents encounter with their children, is life is not fair. It's not fair, right? It's not fair. Basically, that's what the Shlomo Melech says to you. Yeshevel Hashem Nafal Arat Asher Yesai Kim Hashem Hagelim Kimaser. Shem Yeshevel Hashem Hagelim Kimaser. Kim, the first great example of this that we have in the Torah is the story of Cain and Hevel, right? Cain does everything wrong and he gets protected. Hashem gives him this oath, etc. And Hevel does everything right and he's butchered by his brother very early on in the game. That's good. You look above, just parzal pasal, and you see again. Ra'iti ani kol amal bechol kishron amasek. He can ask ish mereu. Right, jealousy between people. Gamzeh hevel u'utruah. Again and again. There's so many examples. Again, I won't spend too much time on it. But you go to Sefer Kohelet, you'll see, both in general and particularly where it talks when it uses the term hevel, that it alludes back to the story of Cain. Okay, again, point. Is a very fundamental one. I'm going to try to explain why it's so fundamental in just a few minutes, but that's a very fundamental one. Okay, similarly, the idea that progress is cut short by death, again, that's the story of Hevel, Rav Yosef Albo, one of the great Jewish philosophers, and Sefer Karim talks about the idea that when Hevel brings his carbon and he partially corrects the mistake of Chabot, going back to the Rebbe's introduction. So then you'll see that he makes a little bit of progress in correcting things and establishing one of the concepts of Karbanos, etc., and it's all destroyed, it's all cut short because his brother kills him, death intervenes. So these two points, right, the model of that is the story of Cain and Abel. But it's much deeper than that. We'll get to the deeper meaning, Ezra Hashem, over the next 2 minutes. Okay, let's go off a little bit up to the top of the page. We have two columns side by side, two parallel columns, and Kohelet does something very fascinating. Because unlike most places in Tanakh, where we have allusions to the form of Tanakh, and that's throughout all of Tanakh, one piece of Tanakh references another in subtle ways, but Kohelet actually gives us the footnote. He tells us exactly where he's coming from, exactly what it's based on. So let's see if we can figure it out. Okay? Habel avalim amar kohel zakol habel. We're in Paratuz Zed. That's the test now. V'yoter shayah kohel chacham uvimadat et ha'am v'izein v'chiker v'kein mishalim harbe. We just got a clue. You may or may not have noticed. It's a pasuk yet. V'keish kohel l'msoz divrei feifet v'chatuv yosher divrei emet. Let's pause for a moment. If you're looking for the Katuv Yosha, look for the Katuv Yosha. And if you notice in Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph and Yud Gimel, what keeps on coming up again and again? Don't be shy, come in, don't worry, come on in. Okay, what keeps on coming up? What keeps on coming up? What word? Dvarim, right? He's searching for the Dvarim, he's searching for the Dvarim. Where are we going to find this variant of the Katuv Yosher? Where in the library are you going to find this? What? I can't hear. Where? Where am I going to find it? I'm looking for the Katuv Yosher, the Divrei Emet, the Divrei Chachamim. Where am I going to look for it? Where am I going to find it? Okay, Sefer Dvarim, right? Abundantly clear, right? Sefer Dvarim. The question is, where is Sefer Dvarim? Let's continue. Pasuk Yud Gimel, the very summation, the conclusion of Sefer Dvarim, what does it say? So Savara Kol Nishma, it's Elohim Yiram, it's Elohim Shemor, Kizek Kol Adam, we'll get to the content in a moment, but where is Sefer Dvarim? We'll have to go to find the basis for, where am I going to find the basis for Sefer Kohelet? Where does he tell us? Where am I going to find it? Where is Sefer Dvarim? What? The end of Sefer Dvarim. And what is the end of Sefer Dvarim? Which parsha is the end of Sefer Dvarim? Some people already know this. What's the last parsha of Sefer Dvarim? Hazinu, thank you. Hazinu. Everyone know that? Yes? I hope they taught you this in school. Okay? Parashat Ha'azinu is the last parasha in the Torah. It's the last parasha in Sefer Dvarim. Yes, there is another chapter that comes after it, but that's a postscript. It's an epilogue. The real end of Sefer Dvarim, the real end of Sefer Dvarim is Parashat Ha'azinu. Perek Lamed Bet, not Lamed Gimel Lamed Dalet Dvar, but Perek Lamed Bet. Now, how do I know that? Okay, some people know this because we didn't share in a different context, but how do I know this? I know it because they may know anything, because the Torah tells me, right? You take a look at Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Mem Hey, and you'll see it says explicitly, Vayichal Moshe, at the end of Parashat Ha'azinu, Vayichal Moshe, right? Vayichal, like Vayichu, right? Complete, or end, Vayichal Moshe, Zaber, and Kol HaDvarim Ha'Elel, Kol Yisrael, this is the parallel to the first Pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, which is Elel HaDvarim, Asher Diber Moshe, Kol Yisrael, right? So here, we have the exact bones, word for word, the same thing, except for the first pasuk in Dvarim is the open bracket, tells us we're beginning with Sefer, and here, Vayichal Moshe, Lidaber, et kol Asrim Ha'eleh, et kol Yisrael. This is the conclusion. So, true, we have another couple of chapters, it's the epilogue, the Zot HaBracha, it's added on, obviously it's part of the Torah, but it's the completion, really, the cycle of the Torah is Parashat Ha'azinu. And in fact, if you look at the end of Parashat Ha'azinu, you'll see that's exactly the same message as the end of Sefer Kohelet. It's the same conclusion as we have, same conclusion for the Torah and for Ha'azinu. Take a look. Pasuk Mem Vav and Pasuk Mem Zayin. Vayomar lehem, simu levavchem, l'chol ha'dvarim, asher alochim me'in vachem ayol, asher tzavum v'nechem v'shmo l'asor kol d'vei ha'torah zos, ki lo d'avar reku mikem, ki u'chayechem, this is what your life is all about. Notice in Kohelet, right? Ki zeh kol ha'dam, it's the exact same thing. U'badavar ha'zeh, haril ki amim la'adama, asher atem ovrim, ha'yardein sham l'rishah. And that's exactly what ki zeh kol ha'dam. What ki zeh kol ha'dam? It says in the previous pasuk, right? Seeing what Hashem calls Rim, Hashem will see Meiva Kamayon, Hashem Tavum Mepenechem, Shmor LaTorah Kol Devarei HaTorah Zot, and that's Sof Devar Kol Shmat Elokim Yiras and Sotav Shmor Tzedek Kol Adam. In case you think I'm making this up, by the way, okay. I mean, I got it from the Pesukim, but like anything else that you find in the Pesukim, you go back to Chazal, you'll 95 to 98% of the time find it in Chazal. Go back to Chazal, and you'll see a couple of quick examples. Bamidbar Rabbah, Nitnu Meroe Achad, it's also the Gemara in the beginning of Chagiga, Nitnu Meroe Achad, Alpha Pishadal Mechamot, Mechamot, Devam Shalel, Shalel Kuam, Nitnu, Min Moshe HaRoeh, right? This Pasuk Kohelet, Nitnu Meroe Achad, is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the shepherd that's being alluded to. Melchit Shimoni, in Sotik Rafa, Zer Shamar Hatu, Bikesh Kohelet, and Sotik Rechepet, which we talked about just a moment ago, the cage will help yoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shenemarbo, that's a prevail last million. Right? What's Moshe, what's Kohel trying to do? He's trying to walk in the footsteps of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so we have this idea that there are two foundations to Sefer Kohelet. One is the story of Kain and Hevel, and the other is Ha'azinu. They're not two separate things. One is the conduit for the other. Okay, we have the beginning of Reishit, Kain and Hevel, and let's expand it for a moment. It's not just Kain and Hevel. It's also Adam and Chava. It's the whole beginning of Bereishit, that whole section, which we don't have time to go into, but that whole section, so the end of Kohelet, once again, Ki Zeh Kol Ha'adam, right? And Ha'adam, here and many other places, it's not always in Tanakh, refers both to mankind and to Adam HaRishon. Ki Zeh Kol Ha'adam, and how do I know it's referring to Adam HaRishon? Look at the next pasuk. About the choice between Tov and Ra, but the first thing we read about by Adam HaRishon, the choice between the Eitz HaDaat, Tov and Ra, etc. And so that's a little bit of what's going on here. Ha'azinu, which we have no time to discuss, we need, what can I say, that's a whole separate discussion, but if you glance at Ha'azinu, and we talk about it another kind, look at Ha'azinu, Ha'azinu brings us back to Parsha Bereishit, this is very odd on many levels, but particularly the story of Adam and Chava and the story of Cain and Hevel. So I comment on Cain and Hevel for just one moment. If you look at the middle of the page, Dvarim Lamed Beth, looking Vav, Chav, 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 a few quick examples. We could multiply them. And anyhow, Halohu Avicha Kanecha, he is your father who created you. Right? This is, where do we originally have this idea? The reason I said, yeah, lohu abicha kanecha, the idea that Hashem is the third parent, so to speak, where does this come from? What? This is Adam Chava, and specifically the birth of whom? Who's named after this concept? Kain, right? Kaniti Yisef Hashem. Kaniti Yisef Hashem. I created a man together with God. This is the idea of halohu abicha kanecha. Kain says, Mipanecha esater. And the very next pasuk, Kim Kinuni, right? We have the Kin'ah, the Lo'an, Kiasuni, Behevlehem, the Shorash of Behevlehem. Of course, Heaven. Okay, let's continue. So again, just quickly, we go from the beginning of Bereshit, Ruh Ha'azino, as is often the case, brings us to Kohelet. Now, let's turn the page. It's a little tricky because it's two-sided, but first, there are numbers on the bottom of the page. Okay, page 2. And before going further, let's show you something fascinating. Divrei Kohelet ben David, Melech Yerushalayim. Okay? Shlomo Melech has a nickname throughout Sefer Kohelet, and that nickname is Kohelet, of course. Right? Kohelet, the first to get it again. Kohelet from the word Hakel. Okay? Hakel. If you look at the first Rashi, it explains because for several reasons. Number one, that what he says is a collection of things from various sources, which fits beautifully with what we discussed, but also because what he said was said in the context of Hakel. Now take a look for a moment, or even before you take a look. Who can tell me, where is the midst of Hakel in the Torah? Close. It's not Hazinu. But it's the parak that leads right into Hazinu. Hazinu is parak lamed bet. Parak lamed aleph is the midst of Hakel. Hakel is the introduction to Hazinu. And therefore we have the midst of Hakel. You can see it right over here in the second box. Parak lamed aleph, looking yud, through yud gimel. The midst of Hakel, you go back. And that leads right into Hazinu. I talk about Hakel in relationship to Zvam and all that right this moment. But suffice to say that clearly, right, the idea that Shlomo HaMelech is the king is the one who teaches and takes the place of Moshe Rabbeinu in the reteaching, the reenactment of Mamre Har Sinai and Hakel, Shlomo HaMelech, it emphasizes Divrei Kohelet and David Melech Yerushalayim, this is the Hakel, right? The Hakel is all about the idea of teaching Sefer Dvarim, teaching Hazunu, and that's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech does in Sefer Kohelet. Okay. So what's the point? What's the deal with Cain and Hevel? What does that story have to do with Kohelet? So, I'd like to give you a basic idea, one perspective, and I firmly believe, and again, I need the 20-plus-hour version to explain this fully, but suffice to say, I'll give you a taste of it, just an example. Every single piece of Kohelet is based on the following idea in some form or another. Sometimes it's all kinds of Google, but this is the basic idea. How do we look at Hevel? How do we view Hevel? Is Hevel, as I think we often think of him, as a tragic figure, as a Nebuch, as someone who gets a raw deal, that's one way of looking at him, and it's fair up to a point, that after all, he does everything right, and Hashem approves of his avodah, and at the end of the day, what happens? Gets butchered by his brother, and his brother gets his reprieve, and the whole thing is so unfair. That's one way of looking at it. But Sefer Kohelet is about the fact that there's another way of looking at it, that's more accurate, that's more correct, in an ultimate sense. And that is that Hevel is the hero. Hevel is the person who, unlike Adam HaRishon, chooses Tov over Ra. He's the person who does the right thing. He does something good. It doesn't matter what the results, what the outcome. It produces good results. It doesn't. But it's doing the right thing. It doesn't matter what happens to him. I'm saying it doesn't matter. I don't care about all this. I'm saying, but ultimately, what really matters is Sof Devar Kol Nishma Kol Kuli Ram Shafat Shemor Kizek Kol Hadam. The story of Adam Arishon, the story of mankind, is about making that right choice between Tov and Ra, and not about what the outcome is and whether you succeed or not. So I want to give you an example of a different context in which this type of idea comes up. I think it's a different manifestation of the same basic concept, and that is the idea of chasma. Okay, the idea of chasma. And Sefer Kohelet is attention about the idea of chasma. On the one hand, Kohelet says that what good does chasma do? The Chacham, the Ksil, they both end up in the same grave, next to each other. The same thing happens, the same destiny. No difference. No difference, number one. And Yotif Dai, Yotif Machov, it just makes you aggravate. You know, the more you read the newspaper, the more you know what's going on, the more aggravated you get, the more you know what's happening. That's one perspective. There's another perspective. That's Ki Yitroma or Menachosha. That's like the difference between day and night. It means that you can know what you're doing, you see what you're doing as a whole, and it's such a tremendous dance. Which is it? Right? And more so, Kohel says something incredible. And I can't imagine anyone reading Kohel not being bothered by this. And I'm giving you one example. There's the point that he makes at great length. And have a task here at the end of the next last box here. Masha hayahu shiyeh, umasha nasahu shiyaseh, ve'in kol chadash, tachan ha-shamash. Right? Nothing new under the sun. And read this pasuk and say, like, really? I mean, you look at so many fields, whether it's medicine, whether it's physics, whether it's chemistry, whether it's any kind of technology. And the example that I always think of is that when I don't know, this goes back about 20 years, I think, something like that, about 20 years ago, so I had my first PC. You know, PCs to follow are not very old, they're only a few decades old. But I had my first PC, and I had to live a while, then I got a second hard drive. And my second hard drive was 1.5 gigabytes. And I was very, very excited to stick in this 1.5 gigabytes in addition to the 650 megabytes that I already had, and I put it together, and I had over 2 gigabytes. And I had a neighbor who was a computer programmer, not sound, he was a computer programmer. And this is what he did for a living. And he came into my house, and he looked at my computer with 2 hard drives with over 2 gigabytes, and he said, "You're never going to need more memory for the rest of your life." And thank God I lived longer. But it was amazing. Like, this is what he thought. This was only like 20 years ago. And now, if you never only have 2 gigabytes on your thumb drive in your pocket, so, you know, you're way, way, way behind the times. And it's like, you know, what are you going to do with 2 gigabytes? It's spare change, right? And when my computer gets down to below 30 gigabytes on the hard drive, I'm very nervous. You know, what are you going to do? I start deleting things and compressing it. So we meet in Chadash Tachas Shamash, right? When I went to Yeshiva 30 years ago, if I went, I spoke to my parents on the phone, I think twice during the whole year. On this pay phone, you know, we had to put in our simonim. You probably don't know what simonim are. You're not missing anything. But the point is that now, right, instantaneously, we communicate across the world with email, SMS, whether it's, you know, text, all a million different ways. And instantaneously, as soon as someone is thinking about getting engaged, someone from halfway around the world already knows about it. Which, well, it's a different world, right? It's a different world. And in medicine, you are an artist. What do you mean, Ain't Chadash Tachas Shamash? How can that be? That's ridiculous. What do you mean there's nothing new? There's so much new. And diseases that don't exist anymore. But, let's look at the other side of the coin. Sometimes, I think it's in the 1960s, I'm very bad with time issues, I'm really bad with time issues, but I think in the 1960s, there was this magazine called Life magazine, and they had an article projecting what life was going to be like, you know, 30 years in the future, in the 1990s, okay, in the distant future. So 1990s, what's life going to be like? And it was fascinating. It described, amongst other things, how every adult would have, because of the advance in technology, every adult would have at least 10 hours of leisure time a day. Now, I get very excited when they change the clock and I get an extra hour. You know, 10 hours of leisure time, it's like, I don't think in a decade, we need it in a day, and they said also there's not going to be any more issues with parking, no one's going to have any problem finding parking spots, because we do, and on and on. Now, this is a tiny, you know, very silly example, but let's be more serious about that. We can open up Shakespeare. We can open up, you know, a work of literature from 300, 1,000, 2,000 years ago. We can open up what, you know, a Sefer Lahaziel. We can open up a book of Tanakh that deals with the issues of life, that deals with the basic issues of living and the human condition. And it's as relevant today as it was thousands of years ago. because we're still dealing with the same issues of, just to give a few examples, of death and of disease and of suffering and pain and of loneliness and of communication and of self-esteem and of family interactions. And we still have work, we still have family, we still have to worry about our work. Meaning that there's the local and there's the global. When it comes to local, if I want to be able to do something on my laptop, well, a few decades ago, there was no such thing as a laptop, there wasn't such thing as a PC. And that's this huge monstrosity that doesn't really bug me. But, so Kitron or Minaposha. There are diseases that, when I was a child, were life-threatening, and now don't exist, because we have the cure, whatever. At the same time, the hospitals are still full, and there's still people suffering, and there's still disease, and the same thing is true in every aspect of our lives. Whether the aspect is psychological, or sociological, or whether it's medical, and so on, and so on, and so on. And that's the point. Kohelet is saying that these two perspectives are both true. That on the one hand, a person can research and can find a cure for a particular disease, but there's still going to be disease, there's still going to be suffering, there's still going to be death. So how do we look at that? And it goes back to the question, how do you look at the story of heaven? Do we say that it's tremendous, it's incredible, person has done something good, they've cured some diseases, they've helped certain people, they've helped with certain situations, or same thing in technology and all the parallels, or do we say, okay, so I cured this disease, but so people die something else or suffer from something else, what good is it? And that all comes back to the question, how do we look at the story of heaven? And this echoes throughout in different realms, in different aspects of it, echoes, reverberates throughout all of Sefer Kohelet. Chapter by chapter, section by section. Again, we don't have time to go through all of it, but I would argue if one were to, and I believe that I have, gone through the whole Sefer section by section, one could easily do this and show how each section is built on this idea. Okay, cleansing breath. I'm going to be done ahead of time. Lean at it. Okay. Page 3. Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, let's a word about the art. Shlomo HaMelech, one of the things that always irked me about Sefer Kohelet, is the following. If Kohelet were not in Tanakh, okay, let's think about it for a moment. Kohelet were not in Tanakh, and if we would have gone and bought a Sefer Kohelet in the farm store and run home with our new Sefer Kohelet, and remember, it's not in Tanakh, right? It's a thought experiment. Not in Tanakh, I have my Sefer Kohelet. I run back to my house, I run to my Beit Midrash, and I want to put it away on the shelf, and I'm thinking, where should I put this book? Which section does it go in? Where am I going to remember to find it? Where am I going to find it? I'm looking for it. Where does it belong? And there's different possible answers. One could say in the philosophy and theology section. One could very well say that it belongs to the Mussar section. Right? Shlomo Melech tells me a lot about how he thinks I should live, what's important in life. He tells me a lot of Mussar. And my natural reaction, being the Mussar that I am, is, Shlomo Melech, you're giving me Mussar? You were such a success that you're giving me Musa. You're telling me how to live. Like you're such a studying perfection. I mean, even if we don't take everything literally and we explain and this and that, but still, Shlomo Melech is an example of, let's read a few psukim. Okay, Shlomo Melech, what do we read about at the end of his career? Again, page 3, first box. Let's start with Malkum Al Perkut Aleph. And again, I'm not saying that these are meant to be taken literally and perhaps they need to be toned down, but look at how it's presented. Okay, just very quickly, after talking about in Perek Yud and Yud Aleph about how Shlomo Melech violates every Easter that a king is commanded about, whether it's Lo Yavel, Lo Nashim, Lo Yavel, Lo Susim, etc. Then we're told, after all that, after the particulars, Pastalis, Perek Yud Aleph, Pastalis, by Hu Leif, Biknat Shlomo, Nashar, Ki Tua, Lebavo, Acharei, Lim Aperin, okay? But וישלמו אחרי אשתורת לא יסדולים ואחרי מלכום שיקוס המוניים וישלמו הרב בני אבני ולא מילא אחרי אבני כדביר אביר. Even if you say it's only relative, but still, that's an incredible condemnation. And then he turns around and gives me Musa? Right, that's the question. And the second question, which I think closely related, is, and how did this happen? How did it happen that Shlomo Melchizedek so wrong? How does it happen that this is the end of Shlomo Melchizedek's life, even if it's not the very end, whatever, but that this is towards the end of his life, when in the beginning of his life, in Malachim Aleph Parak Gimel, Pasuk Tet, when Shlomo Melchizedek in the famous vision, the famous dream, we've asked, what would he like? Hashem offers him anything in the world. And I talked about the Falim Shomea answer Shlomo Melchizedek, who spoke to Amchal Vavin, being told the Rav. Kimi Yuchal, who spoke to Amchal Kaveda, that all he wants is to choose to Tov over Rav. And this is the young man who wants to choose what's good in life, wants to do the right thing, who wants to choose Tov, and wants to be given the wisdom to do it. And this is what becomes of him. This is what happens. How could it be? Where does it go wrong? No one has such aspirations and goals. So, obviously, we can't do Shlomo Melech in like 5 minutes, but, we'll hear just a second, but I'd like to try to suggest the general direction. If we think about Shlomo Melech, what was Shlomo Melech's goals in life? What did he want to accomplish? He wanted to create a situation which B'nai Israel, Eretz Israel, would have a situation of security, prosperity, tranquility. He wanted to establish Malchut Beit David. He wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. Now you look at that list of goals. It's a very lofty list of goals. It's a very worthy set of aspirations. Right? Every single one of them. He wanted to accomplish great things. And the amazing thing is, that every single goal, at least in the short run, he achieved. Right? And that's an incredible thing for one human being. So from that perspective, he's a huge success. But that's not the story that we're told in Malachim Aleph Parak Yud Aleph, going to that matter, Parak Yud. Because in order to accomplish that, he marries Bat Paro and many other princesses, and he is, you know, goes against all these Sturm of HaMelech, and in other words, what I'm saying is that Shlomo HaMelech defines, in effect, that he has such important goals, that the ends are so lofty that justifies whatever the means are, and if he has to take some shortcuts, and if he has to do some things which are technically but okay, but I'm building a Beit HaMikdash, but I'm establishing the best empire in Israel that Jewish people have had in all Jewish history. So okay, so a few little shortcuts here and there, a few little technical little problems, no. But as I'll point out, it's clear from the book as well, clearly this undermines everything that he accomplishes, and it doesn't take long, and almost immediately everything starts to unravel. Because he thinks that the ends are going to justify the means. And if you look carefully, you see that where Yas Alev Shomea says again and again how Nashav he too at Levavo, Uhaya Levavo Shalem, and so on, again and again and again. And instead of being able to choose between Tov and Ra, in Perkidal Pasuk Vav, Vayash Shlomo HaRabin Asher, he ends up choosing Ra. In other words, what does he do? He says that he has the Chachma, he has the intelligence, he has the wisdom, he's going to choose what's Tov and what's Ra. Now, of course, Shlomo Melech tells us in Sefer Kohelet that it's not exactly, now, by the way, we don't have time for this, but the Kitzur Nimrat, if you look at especially certain parts of Sefer Kohelet is very autobiographical in an explicit way. Right? He keeps on referring to his own life. He talks about, I did this and I did that, and I did the other, and I tried this and I tried that, and this happened and that happened, again and again and again. There are many places where it's not explicitly autobiographical, but still is autobiographical. And certainly, the idea, the whole thing about, Adam Me'elch Matati, Shabbakol Eilu Matati, that out of 1,000 he didn't find one, that's exactly his life story. But in any case, The point is that Shlomo HaMelech, in effect, is telling us, I think, don't make my mistakes. Don't do what I did. Don't fail in the way that I failed. Learn from my life. Learn from what I did wrong. And that's what justifies the Musar of Sefer Kohelet. And therefore, when Kohelet comes to the end, to the Sof Davar Kol Shema, after describing about how things went wrong, and one comes up a few times, but you can look at the top of page 2 if you'd like, Sof Davar Kol Shema, and to Elohim Yirab Mitzvotav Shemor, Chizek Kol Adam, Kekol Maseh Elohim Yavim Mishpat Kol Netlam, and Tog Imran. It's exactly what Adam and Chava do at the Eitz Hadas. We talked about the living share. Eitz Hadas Tovara, where the Yitem Kelohim Yodei Tovara, where man decides to choose to take the place of God and to choose between Tov and Ra himself. And instead of the Bayar Elohim Ki Tov that repeats itself again and again and again, her alphabration, again and again, the refrain Bayar Elohim Ki Tov, instead is Batera Aisha Ki Tov Eitz Machal Sefer. Exactly the same thing. She takes the place of God and deciding what's told and what's wrong. That's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech does. That's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech is therefore telling us not to do. That's the mistake that he's warning us about. Okay. Page 3. Bottom of page 3. Second half of page 3. Tumei Tara and Paradum. It's difficult. There's a very, very famous chazal that appears in many different forms, in many different midrashim. It appears here, Bamidbar Rav, at the bottom of page 3, and I'd like to try to explain it, in my opinion, more deeply than it's usually understood. Zos tukasha karabadom, Rabbi Yitzchak Tata, kol zenisiti b'chachma, amarti akama, v'hi v'chalka mimen. Ketir v'aitem elikim chachma l'shlomo. Usual translation, usual explanation. The way we usually approach this mish is Shlomo HaMelech has an understanding and explanation for all the tired mitzvot, and he's going one by one by one, right? And he's sitting there writing his little sefer achinuch or whatever it is. He's going to go to this mitzvah, this mitzvah, this mitzvah. He gets to Haradilma. I give up. Can't do it. I don't have an explanation. Zot Sukkot HaTorah. It's a chok. I have no explanation. Okay, that's what I think is the wrong shot in the Mishnah. But that's how we usually translate. That's the usual explanation. I don't think there's no truth, but I think it misses the point. I think there's something much deeper being said here. And bear with me for a few minutes. I'm going to try to explain what that deeper point is. Okay. Tumah v'Tahara, in a very brief nutshell, deserves much more discussion, but very briefly, the Mefarshim points out that all types of tumah essentially go back to the idea of death. All connect the idea of death. The avos of tumah being, of course, a dead human being, and we have mitzora, that's of course not just in Chazan, but also in the story of Miriam and Aaron, and again in the story of Naaman and in Sefer Melachim, we have that a mitzora is considered to be like a living death. And so on down the line, and they're beautiful examples, and we'll talk about this Ezra Hashem at different times, but not right now. But that's the basic idea. Tumah goes back to some idea of death. Point number one. I'll give you a whole bunch of quick points, and we'll Ezra Hashem put it together. But just a few pieces of the puzzle as we come up. Number, I have a basic question about Tumah v'Tahara. This is what always bothered me about Tumah v'Tahara. The word Tameh means, and they were English translation. Impure, right. And tahor means pure, right, very simple. So for example, if I have zahav tahor in the Mishkan, right, so talks about using zahav tahor, it means pure gold. Now I know pure gold is, of course, it talks about, right, like a pure, clear sky without any clouds. And so that means pure, I know what the thing is, and what it is that's pure friendly, pure from anything else. I have gold that's pure, it's not adulterated with any other alloy, I know what that means. But what does it mean if I have a person or an object, a kli, whatever it is, and it's tahor? Pure from what? So you're telling me, well, it's pure from tumah, which means that's impure. But I don't buy it. That's very circular, right? That doesn't get me any place. I mean, Tahor means pure from Tuma, and Tuma means as. Let me explain. So what's Tuma B'Tahor? What is it? So we have to understand, first of all, that if you look in Bamidbar Parak Yud, it's very interesting. When it talks about Parah Aduma and removing Tuma, it says in Pasuk Chaf, this is an example, the Ish Asher Yitma, the Lo Yitzkata, Yitzkata is a very interesting biblical word. Yitzkata means the removal of chet, literally. It's one of those verbs where the verb means to remove the noun. Okay, there are many of those, and as many of you shall point out, throughout the Chumash. If you don't remove the chet, the Nechvatar 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 Nechvatar. Okay. So we're told that this idea of removal of faith. But of course, we're not really talking about faith because the poor guy who happens to be in the room when the person next to him dropped dead didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't so okay. He made removal of faith. And what's more, it talks about Tumah and Tahara. Again, we have to know what's Tumah and Tahara. Bizarre, Tahor, Al-Sameh. So, one more point. Kimitash Hashem Timei. Right, we know from the Rambam, for example, it talks about Tumat Mikdash V'Kadasha. Right, Tumat is only an issue in the context of the Mikdash and what's associated with the Mikdash. The Mikdash, Kahuna, Karbanos, things of that nature. Outside of that realm, we don't care about Tumat. Right, so it's irrelevant to me whether I'm coming or not at the moment. If I want to go to the Harabai, then it becomes very relevant. Right, but if I'm standing here, it doesn't matter whether I'm coming or not. I want to eat a korban, I want to eat truma, then that becomes relevant. So Tumah has a very specific context of the Mikdash. Okay, so let's put together some of the things that we've seen so far. And again, one could find many sources for this. There are many sources for this in Chazal, and Mishonim, etc. But I just want to give you the idea of Regel Achad almost literally. Okay, very quickly. Point is like this. The Mikdash, what's at the center of the Mikdash, and for that matter, the Mishkan, what's at the center? What's the focal point of the Mikdash on this, Scott? And what's the center of the Kodesh Hashem? What's the focal point of the whole Mikdash? The Aram. What's the focal point of the Aram? Where does Hashem appear to Moshe, speak to Moshe from? Midain HaKuvim. Right? Midain HaKuvim. Where did the Kuvim come from? Kuvim come from, where did we originally encounter Kuvim? Kuvim are the guardians of the path back into them. Okay? And many of the, I think it's 15th century, 1500th century, I'm not good with time, I go there. But anyhow, Kabbalists such as Rukinati talk about the idea of Bayashkein, it's a Kruvim, and Mashal Mishkan, that last time everyone took Pechat, and that the idea that, in a symbolic sense, and you could really spend many hours on this idea as well, but very quickly, that the Mikdash represents this re-entering Hashem's presence. This idea of man coming back into God's presence. So, a regular, what do we have? We have that the Mikdash represents the original pure creation. The original pristine creation, before it's adulterated by faith and by the consequence of faith, which is specifically by Adam and Chava, the Yom HaFamimenu, Motam was death. And that's what Tumah represents. And so we say that the Mikdash has to be pure of Tumah, because Tumah represents this idea of faith and death. And therefore, no Tumah in the Mikdash. That's what Tahara means. It means that original pristine creation. And now we go a step further. The model for that, the paradigm for that, is the story of Adam and Chava. And we said before, what do Adam and Chava do? They take the place of God. They say, we're going to decide what's right and what's wrong, what's told and what's wrong, what we should do and not do, in place of God. And the consequence of that is death, is Tumah, is faith. Now the question is, how does one reverse that process? What's the antithesis of that? So let's look at that for a moment. If I want to remove faith, the last thing in the world that I would take is a Parah Aduma, because Parah, throughout Tanakh, HaKomish, Rei, is associated with Chay, right? Like Ego, etc. Aduma, look at Yishayahu Paragalos, right? Again, associated with Chay. I want to remove Tumah. Well, one of the things that's with Tameh, one of the elements of Tumah, is the Mechata. Now, common misconception, not the time for right now, but you can look at my list of things that you can ask person with a good yeshiva education, they'll get wrong. This is on my list on the website. And this is one of the examples, is that what happens to the person who's mazer, the mefatat, the mayan paraduma, on the tamei, what's the coin, who purifies the tamei, and invariably, all of a sudden, we have a bunch of karaites in the room. You know, it's incredible. And I've heard this in drushes and shurim, and it's amazing. I can't believe who I've heard this from. They'll say, the coin sprinkles, the mefatat becomes tamei. That's the sham. Unless we're Quran, we don't believe that. The Torah Shabbat Pan tells us explicitly, it's even quoted by Rashi. The Rashi and Chumash, you have to know the Gemara and the Rambam, and that it's Rashi and Chumash. It's very interesting. I have a certain Rashi that everyone knows, and certain Rashis, I don't get it. But okay. But that's, and it works around the world. It's a very interesting phenomenon, and I'm repeating myself. But okay. Tetzi. The Kitzur, it's only if you carry it not for the purpose of being Mitaher that you become Tameh. But in any case, be that as it may, take a look at Rashi, you'll see it around the Sukkim. The point is, very simply, that Mei Paraduma, Mei Chatak, is Mitameh. Nonetheless, we use it to be Mitaher. Paraduma represents fake. We use it, Lihitate, to remove the concept of fake. And it's entirely counterintuitive. It's like those experiments where you have the box with the mirrors and the wires, and you try to put one wire through a loop that while you're looking in the mirror instead of looking right, it's impossible because your mind is going against it. That's what it is. When we take the mechata, which represents place and which represents tuma, and we use it to be mitaher, we use it to be mitatei, we are doing the process that the Torah prescribes, that Hashem prescribes through the Torah, even though it goes against our intuition, even though it goes against what makes sense to us, and what we're doing is we're saying that we're moving in the opposite direction of the faith of Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava said it looks to us like Batirai Shakti told, it looks like Tov, we'll do it, even though it's really Hashem said it was wrong. And here we're doing just the opposite. And that's why it makes sense that the Paradum is Messiah. That's why it makes such great sense that the Paradum is because those klukatas are out, because I'm taking something and I'm using this process for being mitahera that Hashem prescribes instead of what makes sense to me, and it goes against what makes sense to me, for that very reason it's mitahera. Okay. We're ahead of schedule. Okay. We're ready for this year. We have the background, we're equipped. So we have a beautiful midrash. We have a beautiful midrash. And let's read the midrash again. I would argue in a more informed way. Let's go back to the midrash and understand what the midrash is talking about. Midrash. We'll wrap up over the next 2-3 minutes. The midrash tells us like this. Zot chukat ha-Torah. Rabbi Yitzchak Tata kol ze nisiti b'chachma amarti achama v'hi rechoka mimeni. Shlomo HaMelech, initially when Hashem gave him Chachma, Shlomo HaMelech thought that he would attain Chachma, and that was his desire. And what Chachma did he desire? He desired Chachma, v'nachachla, v'chalev, shomea, v'shpot, et amcha, v'azim, v'en tov, v'ra. He wanted to be able to choose between tov and ra. He wanted to have Chachma, so he could choose Tov rather than Ra. Amarti Echama, says Shlomo HaMelech. I thought I was going to have Chachma. I thought I'd be able to choose between Tov and Ra. V'hi rechoka mimeni. And it ended up being so distant from me. In the end, instead of choosing Tov, Vayah Shlomo HaRa b'inei Hashem. And why? What was he missing? What yesod didn't he have? What point was he overlooking? The message of what? Those who cut up around message of the Paradigm. Okay? You know, he thought that he could follow the footsteps of Adman Chava, but Terai Shaki told the Eden kill him Yode Tovara. He thought he could choose and say that in order to build the base mansion, in order to create this empire and possess the Bamishal, in order to create Malchut Beit Dava, in order to do all these wonderful things, he was going to cut corners and not do what Hashem told him is told. And rather, what Hashem told him is run. He thought that it would work out, and he thought that through his Chachma could do that. But he didn't understand this lesson of the Paradigma. The lesson of the Paradigma is to understand that that is going to take us in the opposite direction. That's going to lead us to choose Ra over Tov. That's exactly what happens to Shlomo Melech. And therefore, Shlomo Melech tells us, Amarti Yachama Behimachal Kamimani, this is the idea of the Parazuma. And that's what, in the end of the day, Shlomo Melech understands the lesson that he learns, and therefore he turns to us and says, don't make the mistake that I made. What Adam is put here for, whether Adam HaRishon or Adam meaning mankind, both parallel meanings, Kizeh Kol Adam is what? Etolkim Yirav Mishotah Shemor. Ki Et Kol Maaseh Elohim Yaveh Mishpat Al Kol Me'alam in Tov and Ra. The choice between Tov and Ra, that choice is made at the point of the Eitz Hadat Tov and Ra, that choice between Tov and Ra, of accepting Hashem's definition of Tov and Ra in our own definition, that's the lesson of the Parazuma. That Shlomo HaMelech says that he had asked for, he had hoped for, when he asked for Chachma, Hashem HaTem Chachma Shlomo, Amarti Yachama, at the end of the day, he was so common, and that's what he's so distant, that's what he missed out on. And therefore, he tells us, don't make my mistake, learn from what I did wrong, understand how it is that we need to go about living our lives. And I think it's ultimately the point of Sefer Kohelet, which Chazal are alluding to here in this beautiful midrash to those who cut this off. I've been some fun, and I ask everyone to thank you for the opportunity for learning together.
We'll take a 15-minute break. We have a very tight schedule. We have to start exactly on time.